It is the Locked On Bengals podcast with your hosts Joe Goodberry and Jake Lisco. Find us on Twitter at Joe Goodberry and at Jake_NFL. Please like, subscribe, and share as we try to grow this community and pump out daily Bengals content just for you.
What up, Bengals fans, and welcome to the post-draft episode of the Locked On Bengals podcast. We survived the weekend. The Bengals ended up making, what was it, 7 picks today instead of the 10?
Yeah, they were scheduled for 10. Three trade-ups.
They traded their three of their six sixth-round picks and one of their 1 5th-round picks to move up in the fourth round. Well, you know, we're all confused. Before we get too deep into talking about the draft, I just want to give our listeners a gentle reminder that if you do have any safety needs in your place of work, to call ABCO Safety. Mention Locked On ABCO. Get 15% off your first order. You can give them a call at 513-672-1818. Now, talking about the draft, they moved up immediately in the fourth round. The draft starts, Hakeem Butler goes. I say goodbye, Hakeem the Dream. And then, oh, the Bengals are on the clock. Oh, maybe they're going to draft Blake Cashman. No, they pick a quarterback instead. Oh, it's a quarterback. Oh, it's Ryan Finley.
Was that your reaction?
Nope, it wasn't. Okay. I'm playing it up. Ryan Finley was, though, our 5th quarterback in terms of our grading. He was actually 4th in terms of raw grade, but his age primarily, I think, knocked him down, puts him behind Drew Lock, because he'll be 24 entering the league, whereas Drew Lock is 22 entering the league. Yep. And the thing that has his score in the Drew Lock neighborhood is much better production, better size, and much, much better PFF grading, especially in terms of passing in the last 2 years.
There's two guys I looked at for the backup role for the Bengals, and it's two things that they've always liked. Production score has to be over 70, and experience. They want at least 2 years starter, but they mostly, it's been 3 years starters for them drafting. And that left Jarrett Stidham and Ryan Finley. In my mock, I had them taking a quarterback in the fourth round to be the backup. I gave him Stidham because I thought Ryan Finley would be gone in the third round. Some people really liked him. I thought he is a very good backup option. So getting him in the fourth round, I've got no problem with that pick at all. I think it's very fair for the fourth round in a position. People ask him, what should they target? And I thought, wide receiver, defensive line, quarterback here. And it made sense to take a quarterback, and they were linked to him, and they liked him.
2 out of 3 ain't bad. I will say for Ryan Finley, I watched a couple of his games. It looks like he is a smart quarterback. I think he is an excellent backup. I think he's probably as well as you can do around the NFL for a backup, unless you have somebody like Teddy Bridgewater, Jimmy Garoppolo, those kinds of guys that are future starters. Aaron Rodgers way back when he was a backup. You know, first-round backups, for the most part, is what I'm talking about.
Or young guys with upside that you still think, and Ryan Finley would go into that maybe category, right?
Well, maybe. I think Jarrett Stidham is the guy that you pick there if you want the upside guy, the guy who's coming from a very simple offense, has some tools you can work with, had really good production still.
Yep.
You can see where that goes, right? But Finley is a guy that comes in. I think he's immediately the best backup they've had since
Kitna. He beat Driscoll,
Kitna,
right?
I think since Kitna.
Okay, Gradkowski was here. Jason Campbell was decent for a backup.
No,
Brian Fitzpatrick. So throw that out the
Fitzpatrick window. Fitzpatrick is the only one out of all of those that I would say. And when Finley has 2 years under his belt, I would say Fitzpatrick was not good for the Bengals.
No, but he was. You could tell his career. I mean, I'm looking at his career as a whole. He wasn't good for the Bengals. That whole entire offense was in shambles. But he is a good backup.
Now he is.
Here's the point, though. I think he's a better pick to be your backup than A.J. McCarron was in the fifth round. One round difference. I like Finley much more than I like McCarron.
I don't think the offense misses much of a beat with Finley coming in if Dalton goes down, to be honest.
And here's the thing while watching tape of Finley at NC State. Very accurate quarterback, throws with anticipation. The offense is a pro-style offense, in my opinion. A lot of the same concepts. It looks to me like the Rams-style passing offense. It's no surprise to me that he impressed them with his mind and intelligence and board work. They gave him protections and blitz pickups and things like that, and had them reteach it to their coaches. And apparently he aced it and they loved it. So it makes sense. They want a backup that can come in and give them spot starts if needed. I think Ryan Finley immediately is their number two quarterback. And people start to question after that, well, what's the upside? Where, you know, what can he be? Being 24 years old, starting for 3 years, I think we're pretty close to his upside. And that's, it was reflected in the grades we gave him. He would have graded out even higher had I been a little bit more generous in the traits while watching him on tape, because he doesn't have a strong arm. I think his attributes are his mind, his anticipation, and accuracy. He's actually really accurate at the second level, I think, the intermediate range. I think he throws a great back shoulder ball and really gets it to the right guy in almost every single play. There's a few boneheaded plays. I think he can get pressured and make some mistakes. I think he knows his arm is weak and he doesn't want to test it all the time. And that leads his receivers to certain tough situations. But you noted, Jake, that the receivers aren't very good there. Kelvin Harmon, who some people thought was a third, fourth round pick, goes in the seventh round. And I think it shows that Finley really wasn't working with a lot of talent, even though the offense was pretty sophisticated. I think he's a good backup. I think this is a fine pick in the fourth round. I've got no problem with it. The only problem is people, as I'm gathering information, talking to people, is that he kind of had an attitude a little bit at NC State. He's a transfer, I think, from Boise State. He fell a little bit because some teams, I guess, were rubbed the wrong way. Now, I like an attitude in my quarterback. It's something we really don't have in the starter, but, you know, just worth noting.
A few other notes. Going into the Clemson game that I watched, which if you're looking for games to watch on Ryan Finley, don't bother with the Clemson game. That whole team is severely outmatched. Finley led the NC State offense to a 60% third down conversion rate through their first five games. And I know a lot of the first five games in college football are like preseason games against Division II teams, but that's still really good. They led the country, I think. They're one of the top third down offenses in the country. Like you said, I noticed that his receivers didn't get separation to the point where I was questioning, is this a receivers or is it his arm strength? Because it doesn't look like he's putting a ton on the ball when he throws. Also, as you mentioned, I think his accuracy is really, really good. And we talked about short accuracy not necessarily being a positive attribute for quarterbacks. You expect all quarterbacks to be pretty accurate short.
Right.
The back shoulder stuff is there. And I thought he hit some receivers in the hands on deep passes, too, that they dropped, especially against Clemson. I think
ball placement, right?
They had three drops on really well-thrown deep balls against Clemson. Yeah, ball placement. I think... Actually, though, on that note, though, and maybe this is the receivers that he was playing with, sometimes the ball sails on him. That was a bit of a trend. And occasionally it seemed like, you know, there was too much 50-50 ball to his game. And like you said, a little bit of freneticism under pressure, not making good decisions there. But then other times he looks like he negotiates the pocket under pressure really well. And I think his accuracy doesn't suffer that badly on the run, at least in the short to intermediate range.
Yeah, and if you look at PFF grades, he was one of the... on the below average guys when dealing with pressure, but against the blitz, he was one of the above average quarterbacks. And that makes sense to me because it, mentally, and then you're hitting a guy that's wide open. So you don't need the arm strength, right? You need to pick the right guy. And I think that's where he has success. And I definitely why he probably blew the Bengals away when they brought that up to him and had him break down blitzes and pickups. So I think this is a very fine pick for them. In fact, he is our third highest graded player they drafted out of this draft.
And this is, of course, a proprietary and innovative grading system that we're refining. Yeah. It's going to have some changes next year. I can already tell you that. We're sure of it. Any other notes on Ryan Finley? He's going to be a backup. Makes me feel a lot better about the backup position. Let's look at the next player that the Bengals drafted.
Rennell Wren.
Back. Did they move up for Rennell Wren as well? No, that's the one that that was the pick they acquired from Denver. They picked Rennell Wren, who is a guy that... Before we looked at the analytics, before we looked at his production, before we looked at his PFF grading, you really liked.
I did like him a lot.
Good senior bowl.
And a lot of evaluators liked him that are tape-based guys. And when I say tape, it's not – and if you go watch him, you're going to watch a lot of bad snaps and bad reps because he goes rogue way too often. He loses vision way too often. I'm going to start with the bad. He loses leverage at times. He loses his guy. There are too many plays where he's doing whatever he wants or failing to accomplish his goal as a nose tackle, and that's what he played at Arizona State. He's a nose tackle, but when you watch him individually, so we get one-on-one drills. First time I was exposed to him, and I'm sitting with the whole host of Draft Twitter, and we're watching him live. and the man is strong and agile and explosive out of his snap, out of his stance. Garrett Bradbury, who goes in the first round, he rocked him back a few times and just shed him easily. Rinnell Wren was a star in practice one-on-one. And then you go, okay, the upside's there. The ability is there. He grabbed our attention so often. And then they get into 11-on-11 or even 7-on-7, and they go through run drills, and they're trap blocking him, and they're getting him to run upfield and then hitting him. His awareness is extremely low, and you can see why once we got the PFF grades after and then the production scores tend to be low for nose tackles anyways, so I was okay with that. But the PFF grades are really low on him, and it's because he gets into too many situations where he just cannot make a play, or he's hurting his team because he's over aggressive or just unaware of his surroundings. Special awareness needs to be really something I think you're born with or not. So I think that's going to keep him a little bit lower because he tested like a 97 percentile athlete. So here's a nose tackle that is a true nose tackle in terms of power and strength. Type in his name, go on Twitter. I retweeted a bunch today. He levels centers constantly. And he's got actual athleticism, which is very rare to find for a nose tackle. That's why I liked him. He just has never put it all together. Fourth round lottery ticket here, I think is completely worth it, and I'm glad they did it. If once you got into this third tier of defensive tackles, there's only a couple guys to pick from. We talked about this going into today's show. We talked about this yesterday. After Kalen Saunders went, right, we were like, Michael Dogby, Rinnell Wren. Remember this, Jake? That was really those two guys.
Yeah, and Wren goes not in the fourth. Much there.
And Dogby went in the sixth round, I think, to the Cardinals. So it really, I'm glad they got Rinnell Wren because I wanted them to get another nose tackle and a guy with athleticism. Honestly, they don't have the backup nose tackle guy. They draft or a three tech guy. They drafted Andrew Brown last year out of Virginia, and he really didn't make the team. Went on IR, fifth round pick. I think Wren gives them backup nose tackle ability plus the upside of maybe he can be a three tech, maybe in a different role, maybe if he's not two gapping all the time, maybe he can be a penetrator with elite strength. If not, I think he at the very least he could back up as the nose tackle to Andrew Billings.
He does have the lowest production grade of all of the interior defensive linemen that we graded in this series, but he has the fourth highest athleticism too, behind only Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver, and Jerry Tillery. And these are guys that are being drafted to be three techs almost exclusively.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess Quinnen Williams and Jerry Tillery might play everywhere, but Ed Oliver, clearly three tech. And Rinnell Wren is in the neighborhood athletically. Like,
that's a weird one mix, point right?
Away. Yeah, real weird mix.
And that's why his production scores are low. If you look at the nose tackles listed on our sheet, those guys are going to end up with lower production scores. I think Dexter Lawrence actually was decent. But if you go to his pass rush productivity from PFF, he is the worst out of everyone we have in there.
He was graded really poorly too, which means he wasn't getting wins either, according to their eye.
And you watch him, he doesn't have a second move. It's bull rush leverage, and that's it. But in the Senior Bowl practices, one-on-one, he was killing people with swim moves and stuff. As soon as he hit those guys with the bull rush and they're coming back for a next rep, these guys are waiting on that bull rush. And once you do that, you have the opportunity to beat them with some finesse moves. So there is upside here, a lot of upside. Maybe more upside than anyone they drafted in these first five picks that they made.
Well, I think Bengals fans are probably hoping that there's some crazy upside with Drew Sample.
True. I guess that's true. You're hoping it's there. I think it's more likely in Rinnell Wren.
It's interesting, actually, just to talk about Drew Sample quickly, because this is the pick that's being panned the most for the Bengals. If you threw out the Drew Sample pick, throw A.J. Brown in that spot or something like that, the whole perspective, I think, on the entire draft changes, unless you really wanted Dwayne Haskins.
It goes from a B to an A.
Right? Like, pretty easily. And the second-round pick is really weighing it down and coloring my perspective of the draft quite a bit, especially in day three when it's like, I really want certain guys that I like that are my guys, and that'll make me feel a lot better. They didn't get any of them.
But that impact is so much less to the entire draft.
So the thing I wanted to mention, though, yeah, that is true. The second round pick is a high impact pick, and missing there, and maybe they didn't miss there, but missing there in the eyes of the consensus of the draft community, experts, projectors, whatever you want to call them, they all had Drew Sample as a fifth-round pick, but you ask Zach Taylor today, he says, well, you know what? We don't think he's going to be there in the third round. Cat Terrell said the same thing. Sounds like Dane Brugler said the same thing.
That's right. So what they're hearing is a lot of teams liked him. And here's the dilemma between projecting the draft and evaluating players, and sometimes you get stuck in between. And sometimes they match up, sometimes they don't, right? If we watch Drew Sample, and we talk about Sample a lot, and we're just touching on him. I know we talked about it the other day, but I've been thinking about this today. I like Sample on tape. I like Sample in his upside. I like Sample as a blocker. I wish Sample had more production. I wish I had more opportunities to see him as a complete receiver. But having said that, I liked him, and he's a guy I targeted a lot. I gave him to them. I gave the Bengals Sample in the sixth round because I liked him, the upside, and I thought he was a great fit for what they wanted to do at the wide tight end spot and be the third tight end for them. So having said all that, my evaluation of the value was probably wrong. It just, in our system, the production weighed him down so far that it made him like a day three pick. And
but it wasn't just us. I mean, no, yes, for us, it was a production that weighed him down, but also the receiving grade because he wasn't used that way.
Right. And my point being is that I would say that the inverse is Mac Wilson. He was projected to go in round two. We thought he was like a fifth round pick, right? So had they have taken Mac Wilson in round two, everyone celebrates it. And yet we go, nah, I really don't like – yeah, the value's fine, but we really don't like the pick. We don't like the player. So we would have argued against it.
And he got picked in the fifth round.
Exactly. So he went where he should have, where we thought. And we looked like the idiots or the outliers before the process. So, for me to get a player that I like way earlier is better to me than getting good value – on a player I don't like Mac Wilson in round two. I'd much rather them take Drew Sample than Mac Wilson in round two. I'll be honest with you. He not only did he grade higher, but he's a player I like rather than a player I don't like. So, that's the hard kind of juggle. Yes, he's the lowest guy we've graded that they drafted, but at the same time, they could have drafted a bunch of players that would have made us more happy or happier, I guess I should say. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but my idea is, I'd rather get a good player than a player I don't like, even if the value is completely way off than what I projected.
Draft good players. That's what they say. Also interesting, if you look at the tight ends that went between when the Bengals would have picked next, Josh Oliver goes 3-5 to Jacksonville. Jay Sternberger goes 3-11 to Green Bay. So there were a bunch of tight ends picked in that range. The Bengals
traded back. Why tight ends, though?
Regardless, you're right. Trayvon Blesko goes today 419. Foster Moreau goes 435. So those are guys, Foster Moreau especially, I think, that's more in the neighborhood. But then, the other blocker that C.J. Conrad, Kentucky, he had some health issues too. He goes undrafted.
Yeah, and I'd still take C.J. Conrad if they wanted to dip into their undrafted free agency. Anyways, we should move on to the picks they didn't make for day three.
We should. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and finish up with the last fourth rounder, three sixth rounders and a seventh round guy. And we'll touch on the priority free agents we know about right now, the college free agents we know about right now. For the most part, we're not going to know about these guys right away, but we'll tell you about the ones we do know about after a quick break.
Welcome back to the Locked On Bengals podcast. We are recapping day three and really the draft in general. I think we'll do a full recap and talk next week, but we're focusing on day three today. And after the Bengals in the fourth round traded up again to give them three fourth-round picks. So they went Ryan Finley, they went Rennell Wren, and now they're going up to get Ohio State offensive lineman, most likely interior offensive lineman, Michael Jordan. What do you think about that, Jake?
Well, after they traded up and picked Michael Jordan, I tweeted, I don't like this draft very much. I was on my way to see Endgame at this point. I was in the car just seeing if anything crazy happened to the end of the fourth round on Twitter, seeing if, Ben Burkervin went or Blake Cashman went finally. And I see they trade up. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe they're going to do it. They're going to get my dude Burkervin. And instead they pick Michael Jordan. And it's just like, okay, great. They have an unexciting interior lineman. And then I get some flack in my mentions right away, like, oh yeah, no, this is a good pick, Michael Jordan, good player. And I immediately dismiss all of that as Ohio State fans, but he does have really good size. You give that to him, he has
fantastic size,
34 inch arms, he's 6'6 almost, 312. He had good athleticism, at least not great, good athleticism. Had a decent 2018 in terms of PFF grading. Doesn't turn up well as a run blocker. So
no, he was better in 2017, and that's the consensus when he played left guard. And I think I remember watching him when watching Billy Price and thinking, man, that guy next to him has got some length and agility to him. And a lot of those reach blocks that Billy Price couldn't get to, it was falling on the shoulders of Michael Jordan. And I thought Jordan and Price worked really well in tandem. And Jordan was the one climbing to the second level and walling off and getting good blocks. I think sometimes it gets a little upright. He invites that power inside. Because I think when you're 6'6 with 34-inch arms, it's a different kind of battle for you when you're an interior guy. While that's it can be an asset and it can be an advantage, sometimes those Geno Atkins guys get inside you, and there's nothing you can do with your long arms and that long back you got, and you're just, you know, you're losing leverage instantly. So I think that hurts Michael Jordan at times. I think he was recruited as a tackle. They had their tackle spots filled. He moved into guard, moved into center, like they've done with Pat Elflein, Billy Price, and then Jordan. It just didn't fit Jordan, it looks like. So I think while he has the versatility to back up Billy Price, I think this fourth-round pick is a decent pick for an offensive lineman. It's where Clint Bowling was drafted, right? He has a chance to be the backup interior guy. That room is getting really full right now, too. And
it's incredibly full.
It's very, very full. It's kind of people are starting to wonder what's going to happen. What veteran is on the outs? And it's kind of a scary thought and kind of a scary answer because I think it's pointing to one guy.
Well, there's two possibilities with no dead cap hit, right? It's a left tackle and it's a left guard.
Yep, and they drafted a left tackle and they drafted a left guard, in my opinion. So,
they have Westerman there, that's where they like. Well, where the previous regime liked Westerman was a left guard.
Yeah, it's very interesting. That O-line group is full. I mean, we're not even talking about Trey Hopkins. He could start if needed. This is a very similar guy to Trey Hopkins, I think, in my opinion. Very similar strengths, weaknesses. So Michael Jordan, I liked him. Actually, when you look at the grades we gave out pre-draft, Jordan is the best guy they picked on day three. Ryan Finley's got a higher grade, but he grades higher than Ronnell Wren, Rodney Anderson, and we didn't have the grades on the other guys. But so 72 is very fine value for fourth round. That's where he should have went. And I know some people that really, really liked him, thought that the development is on a definite curve where you can see him getting better all the time. And I think there's still some upside with Michael Jordan. I'm interested to see this. The bigger conversation to me is that complete O-line room and the turnover. And it's been, do you think how many players they've added in the last 2 years now?
Yeah. So you have Cordy Glenn, Clint Bowling, Christian Westman, Billy Price, Trey Hopkins, Brad Lumblade, Alex Redmond, John Miller, Rod Taylor, Bobby Hart, Kent Perkins, and then they add Jonah Williams, Michael Jordan, a couple undrafted guys.
Yeah. That Sutherland guy is an undrafted guy from Texas A&M, so he's already got the in with Jim Turner. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, knocking on a door on a spot if he has a good camp in preseason.
Yeah. And you look at the Bobby Hart contract, it keeps getting worse.
Yeah, it's terrible. We don't want to keep bringing it up, but geez.
You look at the Troy Blackburn quote, it keeps getting worse.
Horrible.
And now it looks like Clint Bowling is a potential cut. Cordy Glenn has no dead cap hit.
Is it weird to you that they signed a tackle, they signed a tight end, they signed a linebacker, and they signed a guard? We talked about
this yesterday, and then they draft all those
positions. And they draft all of them. And all of them look like they could play and play quality minutes this year. And like the upgrade for a veteran. And the difference in what you're paying these guys are five times as much for the veterans, if not more. And you probably aren't getting much better play from these guys. It's very interesting what they did. They doubled up at these positions. Now, if the process really creates competition and you get a good player because of it, fine. We'll look at it completely different in a couple of years. But right now, it seems like an awful waste of resources to build a good team for this year. This is more like a draft for next year and the year beyond.
Well, this is the roster turn that you might expect with the new coach. This is bringing in their guys, right? Maybe they don't like Clint Bowling. Maybe Clint Bowling doesn't fit in with Jim Turner. These are guys that were acquired and stalwarts by the old regime. Because so they want their own guys.
Yeah, you're right. And that could be definitely it. And
maybe there's another really influential offensive line coach on the Bengals after we just got rid of the old one. And I mean, lost Frank Pollock, unfortunately.
Yeah, that doesn't sound ideal. So I don't hate the Michael Jordan grade.
Mean to rag on it too much.
No, I think that's a fine pick for the end of the fourth round. Now, they didn't have a fifth round pick, obviously, with moving up. Sixth round, they take Texas A&M running back Travion Williams. So this is, we didn't have a grade on Travion, but he was a very productive player. I plan on going back and watching him. We've got kind of a preliminary grade on him now, but we got to go back and get a solidified tape grade. We got one now based on all the other data we put in. The key thing for me that I notice is that you've got Jim Turner, who was his O-line coach at A&M, and anytime your O-line coach advocates for the running back, that means he's a smart runner and he's hitting the right hole, and he appreciates him as a run game guy and an O-line guy. That speaks a lot to him. So I think from that standpoint, that you should like to pick. But there's still some things I think we need to look at, and especially when they double up on running back, kind of raising my eyebrows.
Yeah, I think the thing about Travion Williams is he's not a great athlete, and he's really small. Yeah. So he's 5'8", 206. So that's, what, Gio Bernard size, if that? Is Gio bigger than that?
Gio is just a shade. He's about 5'8", and he was 205. So it's about the same. So
Gio size minus Gio's receiving ability minus Gio's athleticism.
He was a decent receiver, actually, in college. I think he had 27 catches this year, 20 the year before, which is actually pretty significant for a running back.
I guess what I say, take away the receiving, is his receiving grading was really bad from PFF, and I'll pull up why.
I wonder if that's pass blocking or pass protection, right?
Yeah, that's true, because it's just a pass grade. It says it doesn't say. I think it does say receiving grade. I'll pull them up.
All right, you do that, and I'll talk a little bit more because looking at it and coming into this, and I think people asked this question after they drafted Rodney Anderson, which we'll get to him. Why take two running backs? And we all knew they would want to take a back at some point here. But really, if you look at it, it's Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard, and we don't know who the third and fourth guy is at this point. It's not like last year where it seemed pretty clear that they had Trey Carson and the guy I'm forgetting that they got from the Falcons that went back to the Falcons, and they drafted Mark Walton in the fourth round. So it was pretty clear they had competition there. The Bengals have wide open. We like Quentin Flowers, but remember, he's a quarterback, so he still needs some development. I'd like to see that in preseason this year. But point being is, taking 2 sixth-round running backs, I love the actual value they're putting there. Here's from a team that spent 3 second-round picks, premium picks on running backs, and then come back and take Walton in the fourth. We were sick of it at that point. That's the reason why a lot of people hated the Walton pick, is because, come on, guys, you're not acquiring what all these teams are doing and really hitting that market inefficiency of getting these cheap late-round running backs that can help you and produce for you. They really just turned the blind eye to Rex Burkhead for most of his career when that could have been good, cheap production. And here they are taking 2 sixth-round guys. I love it. I think that's how you do it. I do it every single year. I take 2 sixth-round running backs and figure out if one of them can be anything for you. So doing that, I think the process-wise, get some praise from me right there.
Yeah, and I think we should probably talk about their approach overall. So I've pulled up his PFF data. His receiving grading, really, really bad in 2017, average in 2018.
Okay.
The drop rate doesn't kill him. I think he's probably just not doing anything special. I think he's not doing anything that, you know, he's not running routes like Rex Burkhead did for the Bengals a couple times. You're not going to put him out wider in the slot like they do with Gio. He'll catch the ball out of the backfield and be fine doing it.
Okay.
Rodney Anderson, on the other hand, is a much more complete kind of back, and I think had really good receiving grading before he got hurt his last year in school.
If Rodney Anderson wasn't hurt, though, he goes way higher than Travion. Yeah. He goes third round. I think he might go second round, to be honest with you. I think Rodney Anderson is a very, very talented and good runner.
Yeah.
It's the injury that knocks him back, and he's had multiple injuries and some significant ones. But if he's healthy, man, he may be the backup. He may beat Travion right away. Travion may be here because he's kind of more of the – it's funny. He's more of the Gio. Rodney Anderson is built more like Joe Mixon. So,
yeah.
And he has a connection with Jim Turner. So I think both make the roster, especially if Anderson's healthy. Those at your 3 and 4.
Anderson also had good blocking grades before he got hurt. Which we like to see. I did want to talk about the approach, though, that we saw from the Bengals on day 4. They traded up twice They traded up twice in the fourth round.
Yep.
They went up to get a quarterback, and they went up to get
Jordan.
Michael Jordan, the offensive center, guard, whatever you want to call him, interior lineman. They had their eyes on these guys and went up and got them. They weren't the guys that I necessarily wanted. But they were there, guys, and when you look at the logic and the process, I appreciate that. And then in the sixth round, they come back and they pick 2 running backs, which, like Joe said, you really appreciate that. And then they pick Deshaun Davis, who's a bit of a head-scratcher.
Here's why they did it, Deshaun Davis. Now, he's got a terrible athleticism score. He was very productive. I think he had 103 tackles this year for Auburn, which is very good in college. And you hear what Willie Anderson says about him, and it's been echoed by other people too, that he is a grinder, a hard worker, intelligent guy. He called the plays for them in 2-minute or no huddle situations. He was calling the defensive plays in college. That It really doesn't happen. So what is this kind of pick? And the Bengals have made this pick before. This is a Chris Worley. This is getting your Vincent Ray. And those guys were undrafted. This is somebody they targeted as a priority free agent, and they didn't want to lose him. He's coming in. He's going to be a complete backup, special teamer, leader type, mental guy. This is a Darren Simmons pick. He usually gets one a year, and it's hard to figure out whether it's Clayton Fedulum or whoever it is. Simmons usually gets a pick, and this is his guy, it seems like, this year, Deshaun Davis. I would have liked a true double dip at linebacker with some of the guys that went one round ahead of him. You know, they did this before when they took Marquise Flowers, and Telvin Smith was gone within a few picks of that. They went for the special teams guy. This is what they typically do. They target these special teams guys on day three rather than saying, you know what, Ben Burkervin's still there, whatever the case may be. And they missed out on those guys, obviously, but that's what the Davis pick is. I'm not trying to defend the Davis pick because I think you draft athletes when you can, and they didn't here. They targeted a special teamer, and that's what he's going to do.
Yeah, he had a very poor athleticism profile, and that comes from his pro day mostly. He's also undersized, so he's 5'11 and a half. He's 234, so he's like the same size as Burkervin, and he's actually shorter.
And he's the size of Devin Bush. Who they thought was too small, right? Or at least that was echoed.
And actually 3 pounds lighter and a much worse athlete. However, you look at PFF, he has really good run defense grading, really bad pass rush and coverage grading. So, you know, if you need to use him, you use him in the goal line or something, I guess. But, you know, then he's going to probably get washed out because he's going to have given up 100 pounds.
Someone asked me, so is this better than Hardy Nickerson? And I thought, it probably is Hardy Nickerson.
Yeah. They could be the same person for all I care.
Yep. And new regime getting their guy, and Simmons getting another guy. So this is the sixth round and late sixth round. They do this. It's not a surprise. And another thing on the approach, this is a very typical Bengals draft, in my opinion, based on the history. This is Duke Tobin, and definite, like I said, I did those filters. Questions from everyone was, well, how different should it be with the coaching staff? You could throw these out. And no, I would go after this, and I would say confirmed. You cannot throw those out. Those are still applied for almost everyone, but Sean Davis didn't pass a couple. But all the other guys passed their filters. And for me, I think it's still a marriage between Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor and the extensions of those guys in their departments. Yeah. You know, it's not just, hey, these guys pass our filters, draft them. It's these guys pass our filters. Which one of them do you guys like? All right, here's our board of 120. Let's draft them.
Also, here's the guys that you coached or coached against.
Yeah, I guess that works
too. Put a lot of A&M guys on the list. And we'll get to the free agents. They did sign at least one Texas A&M offensive lineman, which is why I mentioned maybe they're giving that offensive line coach a little bit of power again. But the last pick that the Bengals made in the seventh round is cornerback Jordan Brown, and was it South Dakota State?
It was SDSU, and he was at the Senior Bowl also. So they drafted a lot of Senior Bowl guys: Drew Sample, Jermaine Pratt, Ryan Finley, Rennell Wren, and then Jordan Brown. So heavy on that. Their first exposure of this draft season must have made a mark on him. Does that to me too, so I understand it. Jordan Brown, only thing I remember on him, and it's only clips. I have not watched the full game. Someone actually just sent me a couple of links, so I will do that. We don't have a grade on him. But ball skills. He had over 30 pass deflections in his career, and at the Senior Bowl, I remember that. And he's got good straight-line speed and athleticism. He's got decent size. A lot of people liked him as a sleeper corner pick, day three guy to target. I like this pick a lot. I wish I had a more concrete feeling. I like what people have said about him, basically. So,
PFF loves him.
Yeah, if you watch his highlights, I retweeted a bunch of them. Ball skills and length, man. You know me. That's what I like.
I guess I should say PFF loves him in relation to where he was picked. They have him as a solid early fifth-round pick, I believe, 150.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like for everyone who likes him. Yeah. Everyone that likes him says, oh, third day three, I wanted this guy. I wanted whoever their team was to take Brown. So I'm glad the Bengals got him.
Just to finish up the PFF overall stuff, Michael Jordan was 123rd on their board. I think the Bengals got him after that, right?
Yeah, late fourth round would be in that range because they picked 125th when they took Rennell Wren.
Yeah. I will say, looking at Jordan Brown's grading at the Senior Bowl, he did not have a very good game.
No, he struggled.
He gave up he was targeted a total of 9 times.
Ooh.
He gave up 6 completions for a touchdown. He forced one incomplete pass on throws into his coverage. Average depth of target for him was probably around 12 yards so downfield overall.
Best game to watch is probably the Senior Bowl game.
Sorry, those might be practices.
Either way, it's got bets. It's against the best competition he faced all year because I'm from San Diego.
That's practices.
South Dakota. I said San Diego SD, right? Yeah. Okay, South Dakota.
Yeah.
So that's the bulk of their draft. Do you have a day three overall grade, maybe an overall grade for the draft?
It just doesn't move the needle for me, is the thing. And I've said this, I think, on Twitter. Maybe that was only direct messages a couple times. It's a fine draft overall. The Drew Sample pick really weighs it down. But if we readjust our expectations for Drew Sample and maybe say, okay, the league saw him as a day two guy.
Yeah.
Maybe they went, 10 picks early on him. Then you see it a little bit differently. That pick still weighs it down for us in terms of our grading.
It should.
And I think Jonah Williams is a great pick. I like Jermaine Pratt quite a bit. I wish they had gone for Ben Burkervin somewhere in the late fourth round before he went off the board. Yeah. Because I think everything points to the fact that Ben Burkervin is going to be a really good player. And he went to Seattle, where I think he will be a good player.
Yep.
Rennell Wren has a lot to prove. There's athletic upside there. Ryan Finley is a day one backup. Michael Jordan is a day one backup.
Yep. Rodney Anderson, I think, has got a lot of upside for being your third or fourth. Love the running backs.
Yep. Hope Rodney Anderson can get healthy because there's a lot to like there. And really like Stanley Morgan out of the undrafted free agents they have. Stanley Morgan. Yeah, he should have been picked according to a lot of people, I would say.
I thought he'd go in the fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
He had a very similar grade. So if you're listening to this and you like Paris Campbell, he and Paris Campbell for us had similar grades, almost neck and neck. Only I think 0.2 is the difference between them. If you watch Stanley Morgan, very quick feet. Look at his three cone. Really good. He grades out as an elite athlete for a relative athletic score and ball skills, man. Downfield, one-handed catches, jumping, leaping over guys. People have said, you get shades of Odell Beckham Jr. Now, he's not that. He went undrafted. We know this. I don't know why he went undrafted. Point being is I think he could be the fourth best receiver on this roster right now. I think he's going to make the team. I think this is a free fourth-round pick, in my opinion. Now, he graded out as a 69.7, which would be the lowest guy they actually drafted, which is interesting. But in my opinion, I really like Stanley Morgan, and I think once we got into the undrafted range, for sure, I would have taken him. Once we got in the sixth, seventh round, and I thought they were going to take a receiver, I was looking at Stanley Morgan, hoping they would take him. Now, the one knock against him in our metrics is his breakout age.
Which is the same as Paris Campbell.
Yeah, exactly. Before you say it. Yep. So, and that's why they probably got close to each other in grading. But so if you like Paris Campbell, and I had the same knocks on Campbell, and I thought he shouldn't, we were talking day two, definitely, and some were saying first round. We weren't on that boat. Stanley Morgan is a really good pickup as an undrafted guy. And I said this, too, when the draft concluded, I tweeted out there, if you're an undrafted receiver and one of the top guys, sign with the Bengals. You got a chance to crack this depth chart, and I think Stanley Morgan does.
Yeah, and just looking at the PFF data on Stanley Morgan, because I'm sure you're all curious, he is not the run-after-catch guy that Paris Campbell is. He ranked third in the class in deep pass receptions. He had 17 catches, 20 yards or more downfield. A lot of his yardage came from that area of the field, but also had a third of his yardage from run-after-catch, so has some of that to his game. So a different kind of player than Paris Campbell. Paris Campbell's a guy you're going to run over the middle of the field, and he'll take off downfield afterwards with track speed. Ran a 4.53, so different kind of speed. Good drop rate, 4.1%. That's a pretty low drop rate. That's what you like to see out of guys that are getting targeted deep a lot, too. So a lot to like about Stanley Morgan. And like you said, I think he makes a team. Easy.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say Paris Campbell reminds me of a Percy Harvin, whereas Stanley Morgan reminds me more of a Marvin Jones. I put a lot of clips up, retweeted a lot on my timeline. You'll see deep catches, man. Flying up, playing above the rim, one-handers. Your guys are going to like Stanley Morgan a lot. So overall for this draft, and what I've learned over the years is to trust the grade pre-draft. You'll convince yourself to like these guys once they're in stripes. Natural. If you're a super fan and you love everything they do, I understand why. It's easy to like these guys and like every pick and defend every pick. I end up doing that also. I'm a fan, obviously. But go back to your pre-draft grades. Chances are Drew Sample is not going to be worth the second round pick. Chances are Ren and Michael Jordan and Rodney Anderson are just going to be okay guys, maybe give you a few plays here or there, maybe never be starters or anything more than that, and deal with the issues they had that they dealt with in college. So what does that mean? It means we'll probably end up with Jermaine Pratt and Jonah Williams being good starters, Ryan Finley being a solid backup, and that's the draft. Thinking of it that way, how do you grade that? It's a B minus. You know, you hope for these other guys to develop and surprise you, but the truth is maybe it's a C plus. And
it's a solid C for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably a C plus range for me, because I do think, and I made this case, that Jonah Williams may have limited upside. You just look at the history of Pro Bowl first round tackles, and they don't make the Pro Bowl with a relative athletic score under 6, and he's under 6. And usually the guys, you look at last year's Pro Bowl roster from the NFC, all of them had elite athletic scores. Yeah. It's very important. It's not just, you know, oh, this guy didn't run this fast, you guys didn't like him. It's no, it's history says the more athletic you are, the better the football player you have a chance of being.
And yeah, these aren't opinions, right? This is historical data that nobody, right. Jonah Williams will have to beat the odds to some degree.
Yeah, and people are like, well, what about his mental state and his technique? Isn't that all great? Yes, it is. But you also get that in Trent Williams. You know, you also get that with Tyron Smith, that are elite athletes and mentally tough and technique-wise and turn into freaks and potential Hall of Famers. That is the formula. The formula isn't to take a average athlete with average size and the guy that does everything mentally. I mean, that's in a different position. That's Tim Tebow. Why? How come he didn't make it? Because he didn't have the talent. So I'm not saying Jonah doesn't have the talent. I'm just saying what they took here is way different than Obwehi and Fisher. What they took with Jonah was a high floor, lower ceiling type guy, which is what they need. They can't afford to miss on the whole line anymore. Last two drafts, high floor, low ceiling, and Billy Price and Jonah Williams, that should at least get them to the point of having an offensive line that isn't killing them in every play. Good thing. Those are good things. But if you're expecting them to be the best left tackle in the league and be a Pro Bowler and be an All-Pro, it's unlikely. The odds are against him based on history. So if you look at it through that prism and this draft as a whole, it probably is a C+. It probably is just an okay draft, and you hope for the best with guys like Ren, Michael Jordan, and maybe Rodney Anderson gets healthy and ends up being a fantastic backup.
And you hope for the best with Sample too. You hope that, you know, he can develop as a receiver. They have a totally different coaching staff now. Who knows?
You hope for all of these guys. Yeah. We all have hope for them, but the truth is most guys are exactly who they are in college.
I was just going to point to their track record of developing tight ends, and then I remembered.
Not very good.
No, well, CJ Uzomah they developed, and I think Tyler Croft is a solid pro.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. And you know what the difference there is?
Well, there's a new coach. James Case is a tight ends coach now.
That's true. And it's a new head coach and all that. I was going to say, you know what the difference is, and a helpful one, is those guys were allowed to back up for a long time and work on their craft and develop. And they both seem like good, smart, mentally tough guys. And Drew Sample seems the same way, too. If you work on your craft and you've got the time, you can get much better. And Drew Sample should have that. He should be able to play just enough to get development, but be the third guy where he's not being leaned on and being thrown out there. And really, I think that can stunt your development at times, even though experience is good. I think that's why they're getting a good mix of development at tight end with Croft and Uzomba. But it doesn't mean it'll happen with Sample. It could. It doesn't mean it will. I mean, he was valued by a lot of people as a day 3 pick for a reason.
I think James Casey sees a little bit of himself in Drew Sample, to be honest with you.
I mean, but James Casey isn't a second-round pick.
No, I didn't say that.
Right.
My thing with this draft is, like I said, it doesn't move the needle. I don't see how this makes them better this year. I don't see how this makes them better in the future. It's a treading water draft. I think the team is going to be much the same as they were last year, and if they have a remarkable run of health again and maybe get better than expected play at a few positions, that is how they end up with a winning season again. But on paper, in terms of what I see from them, in terms of the rest of the league getting better, it doesn't seem like this team is much better after this offseason. And I'm talking about free agency too, because you signed Bobby Hart, that literally is the same player they had last year who was really bad in that spot. They signed John Miller, marginal improvement. Draft and Jonah Preston Williams. Brown. Preston Brown. Yeah. So Jonah Williams changes the offensive line a little bit. Preston Brown, Jermaine Pratt comes in, changes your linebacker group a little bit.
But as we've seen also, rookie tackles are in mixed bag as rookies. It's usually year two when you really get that positive influence on your team. So if you're expecting 2019 to be different because they drafted Jonah Williams, well, I mean, it's a flip of a coin. It doesn't have to be better just because you got Jonah. It could be very similar to Bobby Hart. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's how rookie tackles seem to perform around the league based on history.
That's rookies generally. You look at Pro Football Focus, yeah. They went out and said, you know, you have a very small chance of getting a rookie who's going to the Pro Bowl.
Right.
About maybe 10% of rookies play better than veterans. Right. And there's an exact number out there from, I think it was PFF Mike Renner. You go check him out. Somewhere on his timeline, he said how many rookies you can expect to actually be better than, you know, your average veteran.
So one of the things we'll do is we'll look at 2017 and 2018 drafts in the next coming weeks, right? And see which guys are ready to make their second and third year jumps. Yep. Because I think, if anything, winners of this draft class, John Ross and Joe Mixon, their first two picks in 2017. Ross, because there's no competition at receiver, he's definitely the number three guy going into the year. There's going to be a lot of plays for him, a lot of opportunities for John Ross to prove himself, which is great. I love that they did that. I would have liked a backup, but I do love that they clearly defined it with Ross by not spending a top three pick, in my opinion, on a receiver. And then for Mixon, they drafted a lot of run blockers. Jonah Williams, I saw people, he only gave up one sack. He's a much better run blocker than he is pass blocker, in my opinion, in terms of him separating himself from the rest of the pack. He's a very good run blocker. And then drafting a run blocking tight end also strengthens that. So in my opinion, they really have leaned on Mixon. And with this draft, they really gave every opportunity for John Ross to show himself. And then we'll get into 2018 when we review this. Also, opportunities for those guys to step up and make a play. So really, I had put this up on the Lockdown account on Twitter also, asking, is next year, are we going to go in? They spent a third-round pick at a linebacker. We're probably going to go into next year saying they still need a linebacker as one of their top needs, right? I mean, they've drafted third-round linebackers before. Their last three, Dawson, Vigil, and Blake Jefferson. There's no saying that Pratt's going to hit the ground running. New staff, I understand. But, you know, there's just as good of an opportunity that it's Jefferson that's starting over Pratt or whoever else you can come up with, Jordan Evans. I mean, that we could be coming into next year saying they need a linebacker, and really the only guy they got out of this draft was Jonah Williams at that point.
Yeah, we could next year come out and say, oh yeah, you guys remember Jordan, or what's his name, Jermaine Pratt? And the same way we're talking about Malik Jefferson this year, like, right. Oh yeah, they drafted him last year, maybe he's going to be a guy. We could be saying the same thing about Pratt next year. I think a lot of people are expecting Pratt to be more of an early impact guy, and we talked about Jefferson last year as being more of a guy that needs development.
Yep.
But I mean, they're both third round linebackers.
Yep. It is at this point, I think the roster is, what they did do is they got deeper, I think, on the offensive line for sure. We've mentioned that. I think adding Rennell Wren helps. It's weird to me that they spent a lot of time with edge guys and didn't come away with one.
Say no more. Look for him to sign with them sometime today.
Tomorrow. Right, but does he even make the roster at that point? I think here's the other thing too, right? One position we said that they was definitely, we thought a high need, I made the argument for it, was that nickel interior guy. It's Kerry Wynn at this point, or unless Hubbard and Willis figure out how to do it. That may be an issue this year, so that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Well, that will probably do it for this episode of the Locked On Bengals podcast. We'll be back probably not tomorrow. We need a day off. We've done 7 days in a row now. We'll figure out what we're doing next. We're going to talk about the undrafted guys. We're going to talk about the guys from 17, 18 that have an opportunity to step up. And it's time to start prognosticating. Start talking about the 2019 season, how these guys are going to fit in. And sooner then you can believe it, the rookie minicamp starts, I think, exactly. In 2 weeks. And
yep. That'll lead us right into that.
Off we go.
That's it.
So thanks for sticking with us through this 2019 NFL draft. Joe, you should give yourself a quick high five real quick. I know you've done it on Twitter. Take your victory lap for your mock draft.
No, I like to say thank you at this point, to be honest with you. I appreciate the new followers I gain, the opportunities I gain, the people that actually want to hear my opinion and will use it and support it and promote it. Honestly, this is my time, and this is my favorite part of the year, and this is when I get them grow the most and gain the most career growth. So I appreciate everyone that either knew or has stuck with me for a long time or with us. And, just want to say thank you. And yeah, I did. I had some success this year. And I think that's what I expect at this point, to be honest.
Your most accurate mock draft of all time.
It was. It was definitely just, you got three players. And actually, I said Rodney Anderson at pick 211, and that's where they picked him. So, I mean, sixth round, that's fantastic. I've had six rounds before, Marquise Flowers being one of them. But to hit three guys and the positions that they're going to pick, I mean, I said that they're going to take a quarterback in the fourth. I said they take an offensive lineman and D tackle next. They did that. I surprised myself with this. And I said receiver as the last pick, and they didn't take a receiver, but then they didn't take one. So I think that's a pretty close miss for a seventh rounder.
Yeah. You know what I'll take credit for?
What's that?
Is when the Lions were on the clock at 8 and took Hockenson, I said the next three picks are going to be Ed Oliver, yep, Devin Bush, Jonah Williams.
You're right.
That's good what I did. That. In the moment of the draft, 30 minutes before the Bengals pick, I predicted the next three picks. Joe predicted a sixth-round pick.
That's something. I predicted Jonah Williams, too, which I think a lot of people did. It's funny. I was sharing. Here's the – I'll give a little insight. We probably talk about this Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what it looks like from my perspective on these draft days. The DMs are wild, man, from people that are insiders, from other writers, from people that work in the NFL. A lot of information getting shared. People are looking for, hey, what is your team going to do here? I mean, this is – a guy that works for other teams, and I don't know if I want to tell him or not. And this is a whole conversation. I think we should do this and talk about how this goes. The process is pretty wild, but
I'm curious. I don't get that kind of
stuff. I know I don't share it with everyone, but then there's other writers and other draft guys that are looking for information. Some of your favorite draft writers, national guys, are asking me who they should put for the Bengals in their mock draft. So when you come and you share them with me, hey, did you see so-and-so put this guy? I'm like, yeah, well, and it's because I told them they should. And I got feedback that when they were asking, I said, put Jonah Williams there in that scenario. He's like, oh, I don't think Jonah Williams will be there. And I'm like, okay, maybe he won't be. But your scenario is kind of lending towards Jonah, or it's lending towards Dillard or Jawan Taylor, who both guys went way later than expected, right? That if the Bengals would have taken one of them, in hindsight, would have been a much of a reach, huh? So, we will have that conversation. It's very interesting behind the scenes for the media or the draft Knicks in these 3 days.
Yep, that'll be a fun one. This time I'll mean it when I say that'll do it for the Locked On Bengals podcast. It has been fun for us. I gained a lot of followers too. Thank you all to those of you that are new to me. I appreciate y'all valuing my opinion. It's been fun working with Joe again. We always have a good time when we do these little projects together. We'll see you later this week. We'll talk about the draft. We'll talk about 2019, what we're expecting for the season, and keep on going. That's been the Locked On Bengals podcast. Remember to check out Abco Safety, and have a great Sunday, Bengals fans.